you know that often, often, when I'm driving on Sunday night to our Sunday night dinner that we all do together with our fams and stuff,
Rock out to Duran Duran.
I'll rock out to Hungry Like the Wolf. Wow.
You have to film that next time. You have
as
to film
I'm
that.
Driving through the hills. It makes me feel
That's
good.
That's why you always walk in with a glow stick between your teeth.
That's why I'm always wearing like pastels under a blazer with shoulder pads.
Or your Tonsertan jacket.
Yeah.
That's why you walk in with two hookers on either side of you.
By the way, speaking of walk, I am my hamstring, I'm having major hamstring issues.
Yeah. When did this start and why?
I don't know. I think it's golf related.
It's a golf injury. That's up there with a sleeping injury.
Well, Jason, you had your back golf injury last week.
Right, but I usually hurt my back doing things like tying my shoes or toweling off after a shower. We've come to that year.
Toweling somebody off after a shower?
Or what? Just myself. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Because I'm a little wet right now if you want to just dry me off.
We're going to clip that for sure. I'm a little wet right now.
Well, I meant from the shower, sure. Water. So, Jason, how long do you have to stop playing golf for your back to get better?
It's been a week, and today I'm going to break the mold.
It's been a week back. A week back?
It's raining.
No, it stopped. Take a look. I have a window in my room.
No, it's going to be a shit day. You're going to have a terrible day, and you're going to re-break your back. It's my prediction. I'm doing prediction. But
how are your hamstrings, Angel?
The hamstrings suck.
How do you hurt your hamstrings playing golf?
You know what? It's been a nagging thing that's been kind of, I've had it sort of strained a few times over the last 2 years.
Is it a disc thing in your back that goes down your...
I don't think so. I think it's an actual just hamstring thing, and I think that probably a non-properly stretching thing. And I do that hill.
Uh-huh, yeah. If we were smart, the three of us being of a certain age, north of 50, we would do the thing that we hate, which is yoga. If we did yoga, we would have such a more pleasant aging process, I think.
But it's the same as Pilates.
I did yoga a little bit, but Pilates, I did Pilates about 10 years ago for about 6 months. Mm-hmm. In addition to the regular sort of working out, I did that. I was stacking before stacking was a thing. Boy. I was stacking.
Oh, uh-oh.
And it was great. I felt so much better doing that.
I know, but it takes a lot of discipline to. And also, like, I can't stand sweating because I'm stretching. It's like being stuck in a hot car with windows that won't come down and a door lock that is broken. It's like, I'm sweating. I want to be doing something active.
I feel the same. I feel the same way.
Except not when you're in the sauna, you're sweating and you're not active.
That's true. That's the sort of a contradiction that for some reason I'm okay with.
But if you're moving furniture or doing like a strenuous activity or something, you're sweating, I get really irritable fast.
Yes. Yeah,
I always feel like, and this is going to be controversial, but oftentimes it reminds me of like when I'm in England and it's cool out, and I feel like everywhere inside is very stuffy and hot. I always feel like I'm wearing a jacket and then I'm inside and it's stuffy inside.
How about in Europe?
The look on Jason's face.
What, every time you're in England, what the fuck? Do you work for the government? What are you talking about? When are you in England?
I spent a lot of time in England.
Mm. How about when you're in England or Europe or whatever, and you ask for a Coca-Cola, they don't give you ice, and it's like 110.
I don't know how they've never experimented with how things taste better with ice. Things, carbonated beverages. I used to put ice in my beer.
Never experimented.
I mean, like, it's indisputable. That a room temperature Coca-Cola tastes worlds worse.
Yeah. I was at a restaurant once and it was in Italy and it was quite warm out and I said, Can I get a Coke? And the guy brought me a warm Coke and I looked at him and I said, Do you want me to barf?
Yeah. I mean, hey guy, like,
I know. Oh, I don't understand it.
But anyway, I don't know. Anyway, it's a long way from there from my hamstring, but I do have it wrapped right now.
Mm. Okay. Did you go to the doctor?
No, doctor.
Okay. You wrapped it yourself?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I wrapped it myself. Yeah, it is.
He wraps.
I didn't have some. I want to wrap
my
right now.
My name is Will.
My name is Will with a W before the XYZ and after the T in you. You know?
What?
Oh, wait. Yeah. No, hang on a sec, Sean.
I think
what we've just stumbled on here is a rap that Will has always had since he was a kid. And there's probably music that goes with it.
Oh, my God.
Now, would you like us to do the beat?
My name is Will with a W before the XYZ after the T in you. You hear my death rhyme. It's coming prime time.
No.
How many times have the boys heard that on the way to school?
What do you mean write it? I just said it. It's not.
And he grabs the microphone too, like he's shaking a hand. I mean, look
at him. But you put effort into that.
Yeah. No, I didn't. No. I think I said it out loud once in the car, and then I just said it to myself as like a dumbest, freestyle of all time. Well, at some point, Sean, we're going to get into your pop career.
But somebody's got to.
Somebody's definitely got to, but I'm too hamstrung to do it. I tell you who's not hamstrung.
Oh, this is a segue.
It's a really good segue. I feel like my segues are getting worse. Yeah. I was going to say better, but now that I think about it, it seems like they're worse. Mm-hmm. I'm not hamstrung by the talent of our guest, and neither is he.
Oh.
This person is kind of known for his voice.
Oh.
And he's been known for his voice for so long, in so many iconic ways. This is one of my bucket list
Paul Rubens
guests.
Paul Rubens.
Who I have not stopped talking about and
Tiny
quoting
Tim.
And singing and listening to and talk for years and years and years. I've bored you guys with it. And I've just always wanted to know. He has played such a huge part in my musical experience throughout my life in so many different ways and different incarnations.
Bon Iver.
Again, one of our guests who, once I start to list things off, you're just going to immediately know who it is, even though you guys already... He has done it all... He's an Englishman who, along with his buddies Nick Rhodes and John Taylor, decided to create a little band called Duran Duran. It's Simon Le Bon.
What?
Will, how do you do it, Will?
Oh my God! Oh, that's so cool.
How are you, fellas?
Nice to meet you.
Wait, Simon, how do you know Will Arnett?
He doesn't.
Will, how do you know Simon? I mean, I know you're a fan of Simon.
That's a great question. It's completely irrelevant because we don't know each other.
That's right.
I just got a call from the production company offering me a huge, obscene amount of money to do your podcast.
I thought,
if they pay me that much, how can they possibly make...
It's out of my own pocket. I went out of my own pocket for this. Simon, I've been trying to get you on the podcast since we started. We've had to cut out clips of your music just because of publishing and royalties reasons. I would constantly come on to the show playing Duran Duran. I'm such a massive fan. We all are massive fans.
Huge.
It's such an honor to have
I've seen you in concert like two or three times, and it just blows me away every time.
So, Simon Le Bon.
We're coming back. You know, we're back on tour in America this year.
When? All right, well, don't push it.
You've got
to... I'm not trying to flog it to you.
I'm coming. I'll come.
Are you playing at the Tabasco Theater?
Are we?
That's where Sean is.
Do you mean I've got to look at my itinerary?
No.
Sean is playing at the Belasco Theater. His new play, Goodnight Oscar, opens in April at the Belasco Theater.
Oh, the Belasco.
Broadway.
Not the Tabasco.
On Broadway. Belasco. Which Jason was just being cheeky, as you might say.
We have played at the Belasco.
Have you?
And New York?
And it's next door to the Mayan, isn't it?
I've never been there. I leave in a week.
I think it's next door. We've played at both the Belasco and the Mayan Theater, downtown LA. Is it downtown or is it sort of...
No, this is in New York.
Oh, we played at the other Belasco.
Right, yeah. The Annex.
Belasco 2. Okay.
Belasco 2.
You played everywhere. First of all, you have a new record and you guys are going on tour. Last year you did some dates at... did you do four shows at the Hollywood Bowl? Am I right about that?
We did three.
Three.
Three amazing shows. The first one, it was absolutely pissing with rain.
Really?
Oh, really?
Rain shows are always special ones.
But in Los Angeles, rain falls like chemicals from the sky for people in Los Angeles. Everybody scurries.
Is that why everybody runs around with their tongue sticking out?
People just don't know what to do with it.
I always say that rain in L.A. is a chance for all the people on the west side to get out their fancy all-weather clothing.
Get to accessorize.
Yeah. It starts to drizzle and people have their great boots.
Yeah.
And their fucking hooded coats.
And the safari vehicle.
Yeah. And the snow tires.
Just to make it to Trader Joe's.
And the snow tires.
Safari vehicle with the snow tires on. The chains come out. Yeah.
And a rhubarb on the front.
But so, Simon, we're going to get into how you guys became what you became and who you became in terms of, you know, musically and what an influence you are. But I kind of want to, get back to the start because I know so little about it. I want to know, first of all.
This is so thrilling.
It's such an unbelievable thrill. You started as an actor. You went to drama school. Is that right?
For a little while? I started as an acting student. As a student actor, yeah. I mean, I had a few roles. I did a few things. I was more of an advert kid, you know. I did, like, personal adverts. That's like washing powder.
Yeah.
I did a few commercials. And I did a run at a theater in the West End when I was a teenager, but I was an aspirant actor, and I went to university and I studied acting.
That's so crazy! University. I never knew that.
And at the same time, I met a bunch of guys called Duran Duran who were looking for, wait for it, a lead singer. And I had my own punk band. Well, me and my three mates, we'd had a punk band back in Pinner, the little suburban town that I grew up in.
Yeah.
And I fitted right into Duran Duran.
How did you know you could sing? Like, how did you audition for it?
Well, because I was always a singer.
Oh, you were always a singer too.
Yeah, I was singing from the cradle. I sang in church choir. I used to do singing competitions. Got a guitar and I taught myself to play guitar. Well, actually, no, Mr. Shorey, the folk guitarist who gave 10 lessons at the school I went to, taught me how to play guitar. And I learned the rest of it. I learned to play, slow down, you move too fast. You gotta make the morning last, just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
That's the reach right there. If you can hit that, then you pick the right octave, right?
You're one of those few singers, too, because of the training and stuff. And I said this to another friend of mine that sings. You have the proper training and to know how to use it so you can tour and you can do night after night and you can sing properly, as they say, where other people who don't scream, lose their voice, and they don't know how to take care of it. Isn't that true?
Well, make no mistake, I used to go out on tour and scream and lose my voice. I think we all did. A lot of us did in the early days. And mainly because we didn't have ear monitors, so we were competing with the guitar. You know, you can only turn the vocal monitors up so loud before they start feeding back. So there's a point at which you can't amplify the voice on the stage any higher. And of course the guitar can just get louder and louder and louder and louder until the only way you can hear yourself singing is if you shriek your head off. We were also don't forget, in a lot of places we were competing with, you know, tens of thousands of screaming teenagers, many of them female. Yeah, with very loud, high
and
voices.
One in the way back.
And then there's Sean.
And one bloke. And that was you, was it?
And one young.
I bet you had a great time.
With a smoky eye. Yeah.
He was ready. Who just come from behind the soda machine from a makeout session with another guy. But wait, so Simon, so by the way, were you always like giving.
True, by the way.
It's true. Were you giving sort of shitty glances over to the, you know, to the guy, like, who was it, Andy Taylor on guitar at that point, where you kind of like, hey man, tone it down? Or
yeah, well, I mean, I knew that it wouldn't make any difference what I said to him. Yeah. So I mean, honestly, you know,
I love learning what the ear monitor is for, because I feel like that's a recent thing. Those ones that are formed right to your ear, like that's over the last like 10 years.
Well, the first time, no, they're older than that. You'd be surprised. The first time we went out on tour and I had ear monitors was 1993.
1993.
So we've had them for 30 years.
Okay. When you first got it, were you like, oh man, this is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was extraordinary. And I could just turn, I could turn the guitar down. So there was none of it at all in my ears. Yeah. And then of course, you know, if you take all the other instruments out, you sing out of tune. So that's no good. But I found, you know, you've learned to make a really good balance of the things that are in your head. And, and it works. And it is much easier to save your voice.
What's more satisfying when a huge crowd starts singing the words that you're singing, like they know the song, they love the song, or when they're completely silent and they're just totally engaged and you have them in the palm of your hand and they're listening to you doing your great singing? Like, I've always wondered that.
Well, the way you put it makes it sound a little egotistical. Me listen, you them listening to my great singing.
This is a safe zone. This is a safe zone.
It's not really like that. What they do really is that they sing along with the big old favorite songs. Songs like "Hungry Like the Wolf," "Planet Earth," "Come Undone," "Ordinary World." I mean, and the list does go on.
It does, man.
Yes.
They sing along with those ones. But when we play new music, especially sort of like the new ballads and things, so off our latest album, which by the way is entitled "Future Past,"
Past.
That's when they listen. Because they're not so familiar with the songs, so you get that chance with the new album, with the new material. Mm-hmm. You get that chance to just for them to hear it the way you want them to hear it.
Yeah.
And we will be right back.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid. We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity, that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
Back in the 90s, Pepsi and Coca-Cola were in a heated race to try and win loyal customers by any means necessary. But when Pepsi launched an ambitious promotion that encouraged people to buy Pepsi and redeem points for prizes, they overlooked their own fine print in a major way. I'm Misha Brown, and I'm the host of Wondery's podcast, The Big Flop. Every week, guests join me to chronicle one of the biggest pop culture fails of all time. Like, who at Pepsi thought it would be a good idea to advertise that people could earn enough points to redeem a military jet as a prize? They never imagined somebody might actually try to snag it. But a 23-year-old did, and suddenly, Pepsi owed him a jet. Follow The Big Flop on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to The Big Flop early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
Hello, I'm Johnny Knoxville.
And I'm Elna Baker, and we have a new podcast. It's called Pretty Sure I Can Fly.
Yep, we've teamed up with my friends and barmates from Smartless to create a podcast where we talk to folks who have more balls in a bowling alley.
People who accomplished something extraordinary despite people telling them that it couldn't or shouldn't be done.
You'll hear stories about the Air Force doctor who buckled into a 600-mile-per-hour rocket sled and became the fastest man on the planet.
And a man who wrestles alligators and sharks for fun.
Do not do this.
You'll hear about a foul-mouthed moonshiner.
Got a 2-inch dick and a 6-inch tongue and knows how to use both of them.
And an even more foul-mouthed female stunt pilot. We got bull riders.
Balloonists.
Bobsledders.
And big wave surfers. People who lay their balls on an anvil and hand the other fella the hammer.
Okay. I bet you've actually done that, Johnny.
Maybe for sweeps. Follow Pretty Sure I Can Fly on the Wondery app.
Or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can listen to Pretty Sure I Can Fly early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Smartless listener, we get support from ZipRecruiter.
And now back to the show.
Can I ask a dumb question? Duran Duran means what?
Well, it's like Smith Smith. It's Duran is the most common name in France. Well, it's the second most common name actually, because the most common one is Dupont. But we didn't like the sound of Dupont.
Right.
Duran. I'm looking for Duran from planet Earth. Remember that?
So you, but
Jane Fonda. I'm looking for Duran from planet Earth. Duran from planet Earth? Yes, Duran from planet Earth. From which we got the band name and the name of our first single.
Gotcha.
And the name of your first record, Duran, obviously, and your... Planet Earth, the first single from
I didn't actually take that from the Roger Vadim film Barbarella.
It
was only afterwards when we watched the film again that we realized that the title was of our first single was in it. It was a wonderful coincidence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that's the character's name in the film, right?
So Milo O'Shea played a character called Duran, and he was a scientist, but he'd done a naughty bunk with some kind of pleasure machine, and also this deadly weapon called the positronic ray. Anyway, this old pervert back in the Earth Foundation got the youngest, most attractive astronaut, which is Jane Fonda as Barbarella, to go out and find
it. I gotta see this movie. I've heard about
it
for years.
It's a wonderful film. If you haven't watched it recently, watch
Jason
it.
Jason hasn't seen it.
What's the name of the movie?
Barbarella.
It's called Barbarella.
Oh, yeah.
You've heard
it's
of that,
it's a very
right,
famous
John?
Film.
Yeah, of course. Pam Anderson remade it, I think.
Did she really?
Did she?
Maybe I got that wrong. Maybe it was a different girl's name.
Chances are high
that Sean just likes to throw things out there. Yeah. So Duran, and the character's name, his name was Durand, right? If I'm not mistaken, with the D on the end?
Is it?
I think so. Anyway, so which gives you even more...
What a disappointment.
No, I'm sorry to... Oh my gosh, I can't believe I just broke that to Simon LeBonc.
You know, because John and Nick were sitting there, in their Birmingham living room watching the movie. And all they could hear was Duran, see?
Right.
That was the name of the band at the time.
So you guys formed Duran, Planet Earth, a big hit. And then, if I'm not mistaken, was Girls on Film also on that first record? I think it was, yeah?
Yeah, it was.
And you guys, that was one of... That video, and I don't know if you guys remember, that video was like really too hot for American audiences.
Yes, I remember that.
Right? Walk us through that.
What we did was we made two versions of that video. And it was Kevin Godley and Lol Kareem were the video directors. We made one version which was quite tame, and you could put it on MTV during sort of family hours. And then the other version, the night version, which was a longer video, and we actually wrote an extended piece of music for it. That was you could only see that on video jukeboxes.
Oh, wow.
Rock America video jukeboxes in nightclubs around the United States.
And speaking of which, night versions, you guys actually, and I found this out just, you guys went and remixed all your own songs and did night versions so that they, am I right about that?
We didn't remix them. We re-recorded them.
We actually
recorded longer versions. We didn't just cut and paste the, which you couldn't do that anyway.
Right.
Because it was all on tape. It was all on magnetic tape. We didn't try to kind of copy anything and stick it on later. We wrote 12-minute versions of the song, of all the songs that we did night versions.
So that it would lend itself better to sort of dance clubs and whatnot, as opposed to...
Yeah, because that was the only way we could do it. That was the only way we knew how to make long versions, 12-inch records, was to go back in and record them as 12-inches.
Isn't that amazing? And so they have this whole, you can go and you can look it up, and they've got all the release of all these night versions of these extended versions that I did not know that you rewrote and re-recorded, which is pretty
we did.
Heavy lifting.
I know, it was just the job that there was to do. And if you listen to the Girls on Film version, the Girls on Film night version, it has a completely different last verse.
Oh, really?
You know? Yeah. It goes, how's it go? God. Take one last glimpse into the night. I'm touching closer, I'm holding bright. Shudders in a whisper, I'm coming closer. Take me high till I'm shooting a star. Oh. Only it's more like shooting a star.
That's the backup section.
Oh, sorry, Mom. Am I going on a bit too long?
Did you? I've always wanted to know whose laugh is at the beginning of "Hungry Like the Wolf," which is one of my favorite intros to a song ever.
Yeah, that actually was. It was a girlfriend. Her name was Cheryl. She was my girlfriend, and then funny things that happened in this life. She became Nick's girlfriend.
No way. No way.
How did that happen?
Really? I would imagine that's not the only time that happened. You guys have been together
really?
For quite
okay,
some
we're
time,
gonna
right?
move right along now.
Yeah. Speaking of being together for a long, long time, you guys have been making music for so long and been relevant for so long and been able to do what it is you want to do for so long for such a great big audience. What is the process of staying true to where you guys want to go, changing your musical sound and having that kind of progress, and then also trying to stay as aware of and as in touch with as possible what the changing of music is in popular music? You know, like there was a time when it was all the music, the instruments were plugged in, and then they were not plugged in, and then there was more like, you know. How does that go? Or do you guys just make music for you and hope that it catches on?
I think you've got to, there's a couple of ground rules here. Number one is you can't follow trends.
Yeah.
You can't be following a trend as your major kind of writing inspiration. That cannot be your major inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You have to make music that you like. That you enjoy. Otherwise, there will be no passion in it. And people can hear, they can hear the difference between mm-hmm. something that you really mean and something you're just going through the motions with.
Yeah.
And I think you've got to be aware of where music is at the moment. I mean, and I think, and we all are, and we always have been. We, you know, there's stuff that we did in the 1980s we never dream of doing now because it just wouldn't be relevant to us
right now.
What
do you do when your taste in where things have gone is not aligned with your bandmates? What is that kind of creative negotiation like as you guys are starting to work out a new song?
Well, you know, there has been times when somebody's gone in the studio, laid down some parts, and somebody's come in after them and laid down completely contradicting parts that don't work with the ones that went down before.
Right.
The strong usually survives. That'd
be the strong music or the strong personality?
Yeah, the music. Definitely yeah. the music.
Mm-hmm. And what are the politics of that like? Like sort of navigating that within
there's nobody whose opinion is more important than anybody else's.
Good for you.
You know, we don't
It's
have
gotta
that.
Be hard though.
And you know, when you went off and went solo on projects, I've always wondered, what is that dynamic? How do you have that conversation? Like, guys, I love you, but I'm going to go do this for a second. Do they have any animosity?
Well, none of us have really gone solo.
Oh, I thought you had solo stuff.
No, not really. I mean, I've done a couple of things. Nick and I did the Arcadia project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
John and Andy did the Power Station.
Power Station.
Project.
That's right,
and
Power Station.
And Roger, yeah. God bless him, he did drums on both projects.
Oh, wow. Nice. Okay.
Oh, wow.
So he's the only guy who was in both Power Station and Arcadia.
Yeah, I like both.
By the way, the fact that you guys weren't named the Taylors is incredible, considering it's Roger, Andy, and John
Taylor
in the band.
Yeah. All unrelated.
All unrelated.
Unrelated, yeah.
That is wild. Taylor.
Yeah. So you guys do, you and Nick do the Arcadia thing. Those guys go and do Power Station.
Yeah.
And then sort of 5 years later, you do the Wedding album. Is that right?
No, it wasn't quite like that. So in the last, we did Seven and a Ragged Tiger, went on tour throughout sort of 84. Then we got back together and we did View to a Kill.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And that was the last recording that the original five members made before the hiatus and Power Station and Arcadia. Then Power Station and Arcadia happened. And then we got back together, but in the getting back together, it turned out that ultimately we would only have, well, not ultimately, but when we tried to get back together to reconvene the original Duran Duran, we weren't able to get Andy Taylor back in the band, really, and definitely weren't able to get Roger Taylor back. So Andy was kind of in it and kind of out of it. Roger was definitely out of it. And sort of after a while, we realised that it would be, you know, it'd be me and Nick and John. Andy wasn't going to be a guitarist, and Roger was not going to be our drummer. So we looked for other guys to work with. And quite happily, we really kind of developed our friendship and working relationship with Nile Rodgers at that time. And that's when we kind of had the Notorious album. That's what made that.
Is there a story you can share that you're comfortable sharing about why those two guys weren't able to come back in that new incarnation?
Well, yeah, sure. Roger, he really had it all became a bit too much for Roger. I don't know the exact term for the psychological problem that he was having. Yeah. You know, it wasn't a nervous breakdown. It was something happened to him, and the anxiety was too much for him, and he wasn't able to carry on with the band. And Andy just wanted to be a rock and roller, and he just didn't think that Duran Duran was the right vehicle for the kind of music he wanted to make at that time. You know, he went off and he recorded the band Thunder, and he did some of his own rock records, heavy sort of American style rock record. Mm-hmm. Whereas we wanted to be Duran, the rest of us wanted to be Duran Duran.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Awesome. I have a question about touring, like because I think when people go see a live show, they're, you know, and they go nuts for you guys, and then the show's over, they go home and they're like, what an incredible show, not realizing you have to do it night after night after night after night, or sometimes with just a little break in between. What do you do to get ready for a tour? Because I can't imagine how grueling that is on your voice, on your body, on your sleep schedule, and like the food that you have to eat. Like,
soul.
You just have to maintain all of that. And second part is, you know, I live for horrific live stories. Like, what's the worst that a fan did? Like, did they rush the stage and something happened? Or I love those kinds of stories, if you have any.
Right. Just let me just try and
put two in there. Just go ahead and take the first one.
Let's do the first one, which is the first part of that question was what do you have to do to kind of get ready for a tour?
Yeah.
Well, we rehearse, but I think, you know,
and mentally.
Yeah, well, physically, we try not to leave it too long between shows.
Mm-hmm.
So we had even though it was a little one, we had a performance at New Year in Times Square. And that kind of just keeps you nudging your personal fitness up. Mm-hmm. And we're going back out again in April. So we'll be rehearsing before that. And we'll all be physically capable of doing the job properly. Psychologically, I mean, just once you get to a certain kind of state in your career, and you know that the more you try, the harder it is. So you need to just go up there and just do it,
and not
try too hard. It's a bit like, you know, hitting a tennis ball or a golf ball or a cricket ball or even a baseball. Let's say, you know, it's that relaxed swing that gives you the best result.
Right.
And performing is a bit like that. You've got to be relaxed, but accurate. And to do that, you've got to be confident. You've got to really believe in yourself and believe that you can do it. And
yeah, because you're going from just, you know, not running around the stage for a year or whatever to mounting a tour to all of a sudden, I have to run around the stage. You have to keep that endurance up. It's just got to be, I can't imagine.
But Sean, you had to do it. I mean, you were on Broadway. You did it. You did a couple musicals. And
yeah. And that's why I ask, is because, well, I'm gearing up to do it again, and it's, you know, mentally just have to...
Tabasco.
Mentally, can I ask you a question? Do you suffer from nerves?
Oh, God, yeah.
So I have something for you. I have something for you. Oh, this is my gift to you.
Okay.
It's my litany against nerves. And it goes like this. It's not fear. It's adrenaline. It's just your mind and your body preparing you to do something extraordinary, and you will do something extraordinary.
Yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Amen.
Oh my God, if you're at home, record that and play that back yourself. I love that too.
True. Honestly, it makes such a difference when you realize I'm not frightened. It's just the butterflies. It's just the side effect of me sharpening up.
Did you have those butter, like when you started, you released Duran Duran sort of in the early 80s, and those first, I don't know, 5 years of the 80s, 80 through 85, maybe the most in-demand band in the world. It must have been like you just rocketed up. All your records were top of the pops, and you had so many singles, and you're on tour all the time. Did you have time in that? Were you young enough to not be nervous and just to be fucking cocky and just...
Well, I mean, I was... I got nerves. I've been nervous with every single performance I've done, but I've learned to cope with it. And I've always, and also when the music starts and you walk on stage, the nerves becomes, it's more like that little shower that you go through on the way to the swimming pool, you know, the hygiene shower that, where they spray you with sulfuric acid. That's what they do in this country. That it's you know, you walk through it. It's like a shower bath that you walk through, and you come out and you walk on stage, and the music starts, and the nerves just recede into the darker back part of your brain, and suddenly you're there with the music and the audience, and that's and in a way the importance of that overcomes all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm. We'll be right back. Get to the chopper. I'll be back. Listen, I gotta tell you, of all guests we've had on SmartList, I don't know if we've had a bigger icon on our podcast than Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, what a treat it was talking to that guy. Arnold is an inspiration, from having reached the heights of bodybuilding to then conquer Hollywood and become a global movie star. Oh, and for his third act, he oversaw the world's fifth largest economy as governor of California. The man has truly done it all. In our interview, he shares the secret of how he's able to accomplish what he puts his mind to, what motivates him to keep working out all these years, and the extreme generosity that he received after arriving in America. You gotta listen to this episode to hear what it's like to be Chris Pratt's father-in-law and how Arnold's first comedy, Twins, has made him more money than any other film he's done. Hint, he's also a great businessman. Give it a listen if you haven't. Bye, Seps.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you. Like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
All right, back to the show. One of the other things that I would think that you would need and want is the desire to be out there and to be playing the same set every night. Could get monotonous. Same thing with theater, right, Sean? Where you're doing the same material every night. How do you find the excitement to do it as good as, or if not better than last night?
It's a good question. It's a really good question.
Are you channeling into the audience?
Well, there's more to it.
No.
I think what it is I think this, it's, so you have to, the audience is part of it, I think. Because that's the audience's one time to see you on that tour. Maybe some of them will come back next tour. A few of them will come and see more shows on that tour. But for most of the people in that room, it's their one time seeing Duran Duran, maybe for 2 or 3 years, four years, five years. Maybe the only time in their lives they're going to see Duran Duran. And you just remember that they deserve the best show they can get. And then you start to, then you let the music, you just have to give yourself to the music. I've got a little mantra before I go on stage as well, and that is, let the songs do the work. I don't have to go out there and give a performance. Right. I have to let the, I just have to serve the songs. And then everything else about the performance falls in, into place.
Mm-hmm. That's a
and when
point.
You do that, and the music has got a great way of putting you right in the moment, and you're not thinking about what you're going to go and have for dinner in a restaurant after the show, and you're not thinking about what somebody said to you back in the hotel, or something else. You become very much in the moment, and when you're in the moment, you can't be bored because every little thing that you're doing is so important that it's you're as I said, you're serving the songs. You're doing the best you can to get, deliver these really good songs the best way they could be presented.
I'm the opposite. When I'm on stage and doing a play or a musical and it's performance, 135, I'm completely thinking about what I'm having for dinner later.
All right. I know it does happen. I know it does happen. And it's that's the, we call that autopilot, right?
Yeah, for sure.
You just go on to auto. That's when it's time to move on and do something different. Mm-hmm.
How involved are you in another part of the shows that I always love in any rock show? Is the show around it, the lighting, the stage work?
Well,
the,
I was going to get to that, Jason. Do you know that these guys, Simon, you guys were one of the first acts to really incorporate the video aspect of the show, right? You guys,
the video wall. We were the first act to use a video wall behind us.
Yeah,
wow.
We're very involved in it. We work with the designer. We've got a fantastic guy called Vince who he's an amazing designer. I mean, amazing sets and lighting, and he does that. But we're sitting with him. All the way up to the production rehearsals, looking at the stuff he's doing because he's always redoing it and developing it.
And the imagery, the actual images.
Absolutely. That's another thing.
The synchronization of that with the music, with the when you're going to go with the upbeat or the out or whatever the heck all that stuff
is. Jay, do you remember the reflex that the video for that was a concert and used the video wall and then it had that sort of that image of the wave, Simon?
Yeah, right. The wave that came out of the video, top of the video screen. And the one guy in the audience who got a bucket of water thrown in his face.
I remember that.
But it worked. It worked. People came up to me. People were coming up to me in the street or in shops. I'd go out to like record shops in Toronto and somebody come and say, "Hey, that screen, how did you make the water come out of the video screen?" Because they were so taken in by the effect that they really thought it was real.
Yeah, of course they did.
And of course now we watch it and it looks so, compared to modern CGI, it's obviously very fake. Well, but people didn't think that was me.
I was the guy in Toronto.
Oh, that was you?
Who came up to you. I was living in Toronto. I grew up in Toronto. But
I thought I recognized you.
I remember that so vividly. That video was so huge. And the other thing I want to know in that time, so you do all these great things and then walk me through a little bit getting the call from Bob Geldof to appear because I played it a little bit in our intro.
That's why you're playing,
In Do They Know It's Christmas?
Yeah.
One of my I have tried to, I've bastardized what you do, but I love your solo at the beginning of that. It's so fucking good.
He has literally sung that a thousand times. Unsolicited.
Yeah. What was that like, that process of getting Bob calling?
Well, I was at home and I got a phone call and Bob goes, "Simon, did you see it last night?" I said, "What, Bob?" He says, "The African thing." I said, "No, I didn't see it, Bob." He says, "It's terrible." He says, "In Africa, in Ethiopia, they're starving, they're dying. I want to do something about it." And I thought we could make a record. We could all make a record together. Would you be up for being on that record? I said, "Yeah, absolutely." And Bob later told me that he called two people. He called me and he called Sting. And he reckoned that if he got the two of us on it, then everybody else would say yes to
for
it.
Sure.
And this was he had it all planned. He had the whole thing planned. I went and did the demo. I went to a little studio, I can't remember where, in London, and worked with Midge, Ewer, and Bob, and did the demo. So when we all arrived at the studio, Psalm West, I thought I was singing all of the verses.
Oh, my God.
What's that Bono guy doing here? I thought I'm singing that bit.
Well, it's funny because it's you and Sting are singing, and then all of a sudden, when they cut back, Bono's between you and Sting.
Yes, that's right, yes.
And then you see, like, all my... God, I remember at the time, too, I was such a fan of The Jam as well, and I see Paul Weller, who was just making the move to Style Council, and I was like, oh, my God, fucking Simon Le Bon and Paul Weller and Bono and Sting, and they're all in the same frame. Nobody had ever seen anything
like that. Yeah, it was wild.
Did you guys... Did you feel in the moment how that it was really... Could you... Did you recognize in that moment, wow, this is something amazing?
Yeah, because no other time had all those, that variety and that number of hugely successful rock stars been in the same room together doing something like that. Not even on Saturday morning TV shows.
Yeah.
You wanted to know, but I remember the story, the absolute worst thing that happened on stage.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, there's been a few mishaps, but there was one. I don't know if you know this, but I went commando for 20 years. Mainly because
I was not kept up to date on that. No.
I'd mentioned throwing a pair of underpants behind the headboard of this hotel that all the bands used to stay in, and going back there 2 months later and finding them still there behind the bed.
Oh, God.
And this, I was telling this to another rock star, and he says, "Oh my God, I'm shocked." I said, "Yeah, it's disgusting." He says, "It's not that. You're a rock star. Rock stars don't wear underwear." That was in 1983. And I went commando for the next 20 years because of that. Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so at some point in that, I was on stage in the Ahoy Theatre in Rotterdam. You remember those? Do you remember Madonna's pointy bra,
Jean-Paul Gaultier
bra with the cone thing on them?
Yeah. Right.
Well, he'd made the same sort of corresponding pants for guys with the kind of cones on the butt cheeks.
Okay.
And they had instead of having one zip up the middle like normal trousers do, they had two zips, like one coming down from each hip, which meant they had a seam down the front, and so right in between your legs was this kind of cross seam where four bits of material joined up. Anyway, I came running across to do my star jump in Hungry Like the Wolf, where I jump off the rise and put my arms out like that. And I'd never worn these pants before, and the sweat on my knees kind of grabbed hold of the jeans material. I did the star, and this seam in the middle of the crotch opened like a flower. And there's me and my junk flying towards the audience at velocity, and I'm thinking, holy shit!
And all the girls are thinking, finally, this is what we've wanted forever.
The horror
happened finally.
And I hit the stage, and I actually managed to kind of cover up my modesty, or cover myself modestly, as the first flashbulb went off.
Oh,
wow.
Running backstage, grabbing a towel, and coming back out.
And I did. Yes, I did. We had these little bar towels, these kind of like tartan bar towels on the stage. And I shoved one of those down the front of my waistband. And then I was very, very coy and very fey.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Oh, I'm totally naked under here, everybody.
What?
Like, guess what I've got under here?
Sean, do you have any of your pops? You know, Simon, you don't know this, but Sean at one point decided he was going to be a pop star, and he wrote a bunch of pop songs.
Yes, I did, yes.
And Sean, you don't have any of those handy, do you?
Are you serious?
Sean,
oh, my
just
God.
Sean, just sing just for Simon, because he's one of the great rock stars of all time.
I love this.
Ready?
Well, the lyrics are, I'll do, isn't it rough enough without feeling the torture of love?
Wow.
There's music that could go to that?
When she was 5 years old, my daughter Tallulah came up with this one. Oh, my fucking God, I don't know what to do anymore. And I have to say, I prefer my daughters.
Yeah, I get it.
But that wasn't bad. I'm being...
Well, mean. I'm not singing. I'm not doing... It's so embarrassing. These guys will hear it, but nobody anywhere ever has heard these songs.
And now the world will.
And now the world's going to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm honored.
Simon, I know that we've kept you too long, and you've got to go. Again, what an unbelievable thrill to have you,
this
man.
Is amazing. It's so great to meet you.
Such a massive fan of everything you've done all the way along, and we didn't even get to
album.
We didn't even get to the
future past.
to the boat crash. We didn't even get to
that. We'll have to do that next time.
The nautical disaster.
I'll come back and I'll tell you all about the boat disaster if you want me back.
I would love it. We would love it.
We want you back repeatedly. Thank you.
Part two.
Part two with Simon Le Bon is coming sometime soon, and we're going to talk about the nautical disaster. In the meantime, we've just enjoyed having you so much, man.
Yeah, thanks for stopping by. My gosh.
It's been a huge pleasure. Thank you, fellas.
Thank
I've really
you, Simon.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you.
See you soon. Come and see us on tour. We're really good.
See you on
good.
Tour, yeah, for sure.
We will.
Yeah.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye. We're really good. Sean, you know, again, as an aspiring pop star, can you imagine young Sean Hayes, he's got a handful of songs written on the backs of what I'm guessing are napkins.
And these songs are so good. By the way, I wrote these songs with Jordan Roseman, who's known as DJ Earworm now.
No way.
Yeah. Do you know DJ Earworm?
Of course, he did that.
Mashups.
All those mashups.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So I wrote all these songs with him. And, but they're so, I said, by the way, this is so bizarre. I sent these songs to Bennett and Rob last night just to have, like, right? Yeah. Just so I could play them for you guys. I didn't know Simon Le Bon obviously was going to be on today.
No, and like, I didn't know so that you would crazy. Send them to Bennett and Rob. I did not connect with them.
Oh, really?
This is not a setup. No.
Oh, I thought maybe you heard that.
But I remember when you were saying that you had them, you called me after we talked about them one time and you said, I found all those songs.
Can we just hear a little bit, please?
Okay, yeah, so we'll play like a little bit of the song. No, this is terrible.
Hang on.
Listen to my chipmunk vibrato. I wanted to sound like the Pesh.
Oh my God.
It's like a goat getting hammered.
Wait a second.
Here comes the drop.
That's right.
And you're in shorts with suspenders, no shirt.
Lederhosen. There's a drop.
Oh my God.
It's so 80s.
Glow stick in the teeth.
You didn't want to be Depeche Mode. You were trying to be Andy Bell. Let's be real. You were trying to be
100%.
Erasure.
I was totally trying to be Erasure. And we can cut that now.
Wait, that sounds pretty great, Sean.
It's pretty good, Sean. Now, what are you singing? What is the I want to what?
It's so bad. The words are so bad. It's like, I walk the road.
I walk the road.
Between my happiness and despair. Like,
between
what?
How old were you when you were writing this?
22.
There should be some sort of a reward program for diehard Smartless listeners that you get. How many songs are there? Three or four?
There's two that are done, and then two that are kind of.
They should be able to get those two songs.
Now, if I could
anyway,
say to you, well,
I'm
hang
so
on.
Glad
no, anyway, no fucking anyway. Hang on a second. How happy would you be if we dropped your tunes? But we brought in, and here are some of the names who are going to come in and sing, and we re-record them. You ready?
Okay.
It's going to be you, Andy Bell, obviously.
Oh, my God, I would fucking die. I would love that. He's like my hero.
Andy Bell.
Andy Bell's the lead singer of Erasure.
And also, we're going to get, what's his name, who we were just talking about from Erasure, the other who used to be.
Oh,
the,
Vince Clark.
Vince Clark, who one of the founding members of Depeche Mode and who founded Erasure.
And Yaz.
And also Yaz with Alison Moye. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get Vince Clark. We're going to get Andy Bell. So everybody from Erasure. We're going to get.
How are you going to get these people?
Martin Gore.
Simon Le Bon.
Dave Gahan.
And we're going to have Simon. And we're going to have, what's his name? Is it Jimmy Somerville from Bronski?
Jimmy Somerville from
Bronski Beat. Who actually did Band-Aid 2 when they did a second one in 1989.
Yeah, that's right.
Somerville was on that.
Yeah, that's right. How do you know all this?
Because
Will
I love
is like
music.
Showing me a side of his Canadian youth. Where, did you have one of those mopeds with the raccoon tail and everything?
No, I wasn't. I rode around like I was Quadrophenia, you know, with a long... Boy. Long parka. No, right. I didn't have that. I was a huge Smiths fan, obviously.
Yeah. Huge, yeah.
Massive.
We listened to the exact same music growing up.
I know.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But it was, I'm so glad we didn't play that while Simon was on. We waited till it's up.
Simon Le Bon, when I remember seeing that video for like Hungry Like the Wolf in Rio, and he talks about nerves, he was so confident. That was the other thing. Everybody in the band was so confident and cool. And they were kind of doing, like, they were wearing mascara in their things, and they were just kind of like, they were just like
it was also the start of MTV. It was really the first time our generation really got a look at rock stars and what they do and how they do it.
But they weren't a boy band in the sense that, like, and no offense, but they were actual musicians, and they were actually really good and handsome.
They weren't like a corporate transaction. Yeah.
No, those guys formed. I mean, they all kind of came together, like put ads out in Melody Maker magazine, and they met each other and at a bar, and they formed the band, and they worked at the bar. Like they really earned it and wrote all these great songs.
But it's a testament that's why they have longevity, I think, right? Because they're the real deal.
I'd love to hear their new album and see how their musical styles have changed.
Yeah. But they had hit records. Then they break up, do other things. Then they come back, and then like 10 years later have another huge smash hit record in the middle 90s with the Wedding album. You know, they just keep doing it. And it's a testament to
that. You're going to their show when they come here, yeah?
Guaranteed.
Oh, for sure.
I didn't know that they were at the Hollywood Bowl last year. And somebody said to me, like, Will, you're definitely going to Duran Duran, right? And I was like, what?
Yeah, I'm going to that. I'm going to Depeche Mode in September.
I was out of town. We're going to Depeche Mode together.
Wait, Depeche Mode is playing in September?
I know every word.
I love Depeche Mode. And, one of my biggest regrets, I have a lot, as you guys both know.
Mm-hmm. I think I'm looking at one right now with that sweater.
Just look at your hair.
One of my biggest regrets.
Boy, we didn't miss that. We both swung hard at that one, Sean.
I mean.
You can't get a softball by us. Go ahead, Will.
I mean, Jesus Christ. Thank God I'm batting cleanup in this crew. You know what I mean?
We're so eager.
In 1995, God, I might have messed up on the date. I can't believe it.
But
because it's so hurtful still to this day, I had the ability to go see the Smiths play one of their only shows they ever did in Canada, and I couldn't go because I had to leave with my family.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, can I just stay an extra day to see them? They were playing at Canada's Wonderland outside of Toronto. And I couldn't go see them. And then
in 95?
Yeah, 85. And then within—
You had to go on a family vacation?
Go be with my family for the summer. And then, of course, within 2 years, they release The Queen Is Dead, then they break up.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks, Alex.
But anyway, I want to stay in the present because I don't want to spend a lot of time talking about bygones.
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 Bye.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Rob Armjarve, Bennett Barbaco, and Michael Grant Terry.
Smartless.
If you like Smartless, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.